Hello, and welcome to Between the Games of Antares, a Beyond the Gates of Antares podcast. Once again, you are joined by Josh Peel, Josh Wood, Jamie Morris, and today featuring special guest Kevin Stotts from the Tabletop Warlords. There he is. We love the woo. On today's episode, we will be talking a bit more about the Tale of Four Shards, because we've done our next £50 worth of purchases. We'll talk about a couple of games. We've got a little quiz to test Kevin's knowledge on Beyond the Gates of Antares. And we've got a little rules focus, sorry. So, yeah. Jamie, why don't you kick us off with a bit of Tale of Four Shards?
Sure thing. So we're slightly behind on releasing the article that I promised. I said we were going to get an article out onto the Antares Nexus, but we've been editing it together and making sure that it's a good article. So that's going to come out in the next day or two. And that'll give you a bit more detail into what we explained on the last episode. And then we've had a couple of battles since then. We've tried to get everyone into at least one game. I think we've had two or three in some cases, right?
Yeah, so, I managed to get three in.
Yeah.
I've even played people outside of the Tales of Four Shards.
Sacrebleu. So, okay, well, with a slight veering away from purely Tale of Four Shards, Kev, what about yourself? Have you managed to get any games in this last month or so?
I have, over the course of this year, created a gaming group with my coworkers. And so I started them off real slow, but we're starting to get into them picking their factions and own models. So I've played probably about six games, I would say, in the last month.
Wow, that's impressive.
They were very little, though. Yeah, mind you, it was very much the structure of the game. So think Kara 9 scenarios.
Nice. Was that against six different opponents, or did you play anyone twice?
It was two with my fiance and four with four individual members of the gaming group.
Very nice. So you're getting quite a good little group going there. Is everyone picking different factions, or do you have any duplicates?
Everybody has kind of spread out to their own. We had two that were looking at Gar, which I was like, that's too many Gar.
All the distortion down. Yeah.
Exactly. I think I told him it was my least favorite faction too much to fight. But since I had I have like five fully painted armies, so they've had the luxury of not doing a lot of hobby work on their end for the beginning of this phase.
Yeah, so we've got the same kind of thing here. When we started the Tale of Four Shards, in order for everyone to kind of get an idea of how their chosen faction was going to play, I just brought along all my armies because I've got everything except for the Vol. And so now we're kind of weaning them off of my models. And they've got to stand on their own 2 feet. So that no more C3 M25 for Josh Peel.
And based off that, I already have an apology to make.
Oh yeah, go on. You should.
Might have not noticed that the MV5 combat drone is force level 2 only. And might have been fielding it in 60-point games.
Because we played a lot of 60-point games.
The rules are really just a suggestion.
Yeah, it was just a guide that it wrecks face at anything below force level 2, I promise.
Yeah,
yeah, and it really, like, it was a fairly critical linchpin of your force every time.
Oh, yeah.
Double battlefields. And it's not been taken down yet, has it?
But you took it down once with your Boromite filth that charged it.
Yes, that's right. I think I pinned it to death.
You did,
pinned
it out of the game, yeah.
Oh, okay, so that's definitely a bit that I want to mention, because obviously I'm not doing the Tale of Four Shards, but I did manage to get a game in, and I brought my Boromites along to fight the Isaurians. I think we did the scenario where you're defending?
Pretty much the one mission that you don't want Boromites to have as a defender.
Yeah, because the Boromites obviously have got lower movement than most other factions, right? And so they were defending their three objectives. Hold the line, I think was the name of the scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And how many turns did we get to in the end?
We got to 14 turns because 14. I didn't want to give up.
Yeah.
That's a lot of turns.
The hilarious thing was, obviously, it's a very objective-focused game, and the Boromites start on the objectives. And I think the writing was on the wall from, like, turn two, that you were kind of standing back and shooting.
Start of turn three, the MV5 combat drone went down.
If you went to 14 turns, presumably, Josh, you won, right?
Yeah, of course.
No, he did not. I think you were wiped out to a map, as I recall.
Yeah, I was completely wiped out. Yeah. There was just pin markers and bits of body left.
It was, but it was largely because we knew we weren't going to have time to get a second game in, and we just wanted to kind of see how long the Isaurians could last throwing their bodies at the defenders.
To be fair, though, they lost the combat drone start of turn 3. The MV5 went down.
So you went 11 more turns.
Yeah. Yeah. So being 26 points down in a 60-point game for 11 more turns, true. I think they held out quite well.
So I can't remember. What was it? Was it the Rocker Riders that took the MV5 out? So yeah, and then I think it was only when I started playing against you guys that I started counting the points of the unit that I lost versus the points of the unit that you lost. And that really worked out well in my favour because the Rocker Riders were way, way cheaper than the MV5. So actually, statistically, if you looked at all of the games you've played and how many turns you've played with the MV5 versus without, you're probably okay. You haven't. Yeah. You've probably cheated less than you've.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks to you, I've cheated less than I meant to. No, yeah, I'm joking.
Because you had 11 whole turns without it. So yeah. But that's partly my fault as well that you've been cheating because, of course, you've been relying on the List Builder app, which is not currently correctly telling you that you've got a force level restriction on that unit.
I wonder who we could blame for that.
Yeah, it's definitely my bad. So that's obviously anyone who is using the List Builder, just be aware that there are some flaws in its logic. I will get around to fixing those at some point. But okay, so any notable games, Kev, that you've... before I even continue, is it okay to call you Kev, or do you prefer Kevin?
Absolutely. I don't mind at all. Whatever.
It saves me a whole syllable and think of all
exactly
the
right.
We'll see. So any notable games, Kev?
I mean, the notable thing is I cannot beat my fiance, and
it's frowned upon.
It's starting to get troublesome because this is across several war games as well. So I'm starting to see an unfortunate trend, which people have witnessed. I'm not letting her win by any means. It's like, but she has this preternatural luck. And crits just, like, it's insane. I don't know. And so she keeps just absolutely flooring me. And so I'll try to throw a curveball, and then luck will just save her no matter what. So it's, like, it's so frustrating right now. But like I said, I've been playing, like, smaller games and kind of just enjoying, like, the looking at the different game mechanics because it's not a war game if you're not screwing up the rules constantly. And I've always found Antares to be very fun at that skirmish level. So I've just been having strictly fun games recently, and it's been a blast.
So I remember rightly when she appeared in at least one episode on your channel, right?
Yes, yes. she had one guest appearance.
And she was playing Concord, if I remember rightly?
Her favorite faction.
Right, okay. And the new Who was pretty pivotal.
Oh, yes. And that's definitely her favorite unit. She actually, Tim Bancroft had hosted a fiction contest at one point, and she had co-wrote a story with me about new Who in the Concord. And so she's been in love with that faction ever since, and she uses them to good avail. It is the truth.
So did she use the Concord again this time?
Yeah, she plays exclusively the Concord at the moment. She discovered how brutally amazing drop troops are if used correctly. She had a very advantageous charge on a unit of my new Boromites that had two pins, and I was destroyed to a man, which was no bueno.
That is pretty harsh, because the Boromites are usually pretty handy in close combat.
Yes, that was the doubly frustrating fact.
Yeah, I guess if you go into it starting with two pins, doesn't matter how many casualties you inflict, you might still end up losing.
And they can generate so many hits with those underslung X-slings. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. So with the amount of... So you said you got five armies, is that right?
Yes, I have Freeborn, Concord, Algren, Gar, and what am I missing?
You got Boromite, right. And so which one's that? So you're missing Virai, is that right?
I have...
Volk, I think...
My 3D printer has been working for months now, so the Boral will definitely be the next thing that I most likely field, because I love the Ashkar as well, and so I'm definitely waiting for another Skytrax deal so I can grab a hold of that. And then Virai, I'm considering proxying them with different miniatures, because robot minis are everywhere.
Have you got any particular range in mind?
I have recently gotten a hold of a 3D resin printer, and I am in love. I am smitten. And I cannot stop. You know, it's one of those things where it's like when you talk to someone who's in 3D printing, you're like, oh my gosh, you're saving so much money. And then every single night I find myself in this like STL search where I'm like, well, I'm going to grab that. I'm going to grab that. I'm going to grab that. It's just ridiculous. But there's a lot of cool designs out there that definitely would be suitable for proxies. I even found an interesting organic like an insectoid army. I was like, ooh, this would be an incredibly interesting reskin for the Viri, so that might be in the future cool, as well.
Yeah, because they do have I hesitate to say it because I know that some people will not like the parallel, but they sometimes remind me of Tyranids because they're very alien, they're devastating close up, and obviously that's a trait that runs right the way through the Tyranid forces that I remember, at least from back in the day. So yeah, it'd be quite interesting to see like an organic version of the Viri.
Yeah, that'd be absolutely very sick.
Yeah. Okay. So with that in mind then, if you were to participate in the Tale of Four Shards, is there whether it's a faction that you already own or a faction that you don't yet own, what would be your choice of faction if you want to build up a new force month by month?
I would say, for the listener who is also equipped with a 3D printer, you could really surprise your gaming group by going with the Voril, because those STLs are cheap as free, and you could really gain the system with some cheap resin, requiring you then to only buy from Skytrax the Askar units, which would be able to kind of pad your numbers. And that would be interesting, because then you could really bring a force to the table that veteran and new players would really have a fun time interacting with, because they'd just be so unfamiliar. But I will say, all across the armies in Antares, the Freeborn will always have a special place in my heart. I don't know what it is. I am obsessed with Frank Herbert's Dune, one of my favorite books. And there are so many influences I can see in that faction, and just their how they function in the lore and on the battlefield. And so I've always just loved it. And they just have such an insane variety of units that you really can... I mean, you could have three Freeborn players, and other than their core units, their forces could differ wildly, which is cool. And so you could really easily grab a hold of the Plastic Damari squad to kind of pad out your core choices. And then you'd probably have enough money left over to get like an X launcher or perhaps a squad of bikes or something like that. And it would really be a pretty functional force right off the get. But I will say, if you don't mind cheating and going over the budget, the Vardanari are my favorite infantry in the game. The best soldiers in Antaran space. There's
no issue with going over the budget. We've done this.
I'm about to say, I'll go the Jamie route and accidentally double it. don't mind me.
I agree with you on the kind of the Dune side of things. I know obviously there's some people have compared the aesthetic of the Domari and the Vardanari with their cloaks and everything. Like, they look a little like they could have been straight out of...
Oh, absolutely.
And the variety wise, we were discussing, you had an idea for a list, right, recently for the Freeborn. You want to share that?
Yeah, it was all misgenics. It was a filthy, filthy list.
Yeah, so basically a zombie list, right?
Yeah,
so,
pretty much. It was a zombie list that you wouldn't have a clue what was going to happen.
Yeah, and it sounds like it would be like a fun thematic list to play against, but it would either be really overpowered or really underpowered.
So I've got the list up in front of me. It's 100 points. Okay. It's 6 order dice.
Only 6 order dice. Actually, I was expecting a lot more. No, I thought you were going to say 12.
So it's a rogue Nuhu with the 2 elite bodyguards, a spotter, a medi, and a batadronin.
Okay.
It is then 5 misgenic squads.
Okay.
All of them with 2 misgenic abilities and stomographs.
Okay.
They're all 12 man.
Oh, that's what. Okay, so there's still a lot of bodies on there, but...
So you're looking at 12. You look at 60 bodies plus the Nuhu.
Right, okay.
So it's almost like a swarm.
I mean...
But only 6 dice.
It's an interesting choice, though, because... So if I remember rightly, version 2, they make it slightly cheaper to upgrade squads with more men than to get a new squad, right? So... Is that why you went that route? Because it feels like with the Soma Grafts, you don't have to worry quite so much about pins. So padding out the numbers of the squads doesn't really give you as much of a benefit as it would in, say, a squad that you want to try not to get them pinned out.
I think what I was hoping for was where I could pick that one misgenic ability.
Right.
To be able to get something that was more combat oriented and then have enough wounds to be able to get them in.
I suppose with more squads, you'd have to pay for that upgrade twice as many times, right?
Yeah, so what I was hoping for was to be able to get the excessively violent, which is two attacks in hand to hand.
Right, yeah. So I suppose what you're basically doing there is seeding the initiative in the hopes that you'll just end up with a very powerful list.
Yeah.
I'd love to try playing against that at some
point. It sounds like it's going to be fun.
I'm not sure which army I would take against it.
I think Gar would probably do well.
I think the Gar would do well, but I would like you, if I was going to run it against you, to run a freeborn list against it.
Absolutely.
So as if the New Who has betrayed and broken free with its misgenics and you're trying to control it.
Yeah, that does sound like the sort of thing that you would get from a rogue New Who list.
Maneuvering, you could, as long as the enemy didn't have high ground or units that could see over smaller units, you could really create an effective meat shield that would be terrifying.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, and I mean, so there's a lot of luck. I think you might get at the beginning of the game roll some terrible upgrades and sort of the writings on the wall for the whole game. But as we've already discussed, that doesn't put Josh off. We'll go to at least 14 turns.
And list like that is so fun for the hobby because really, when you're looking at misgenic rejects, they can be anything. I actually had the exact same idea. And when I think it was Warlords was having a sale, I think the miniature range is Savage Worlds, if I'm not mistaken. But I bought 60 chimpanzees and I painted them blue. And so I was going to have a rogue New Who with an army of blue chimpanzees. That one's still in the works, but it's just you could do anything, which is so fun with that list.
Yeah, I like that. It's a little bit out there. That just called to mind one of the battle reports you guys did. I think you did it twice, actually, which was the Feast of New Turk New.
Yes, that was the lamest episode ever.
I loved it.
I loved it too. Yeah.
Because there's a tendency to kind of take yourself very seriously when you're kind of trying to come up with a theme for any characters or anything. And just this turkey running around in the middle of the field.
It's so hilarious. You got to have fun with it. You really do.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to steal it, but we don't celebrate Thanksgiving over here. So I don't know, maybe like the Easter Bunny or
Easter. There you go. Yeah, so there's got to be an equivalency in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, you just use the Burrows and Badgers minis and just have the Easter Bunny running around.
There you go. So yeah, I think maybe we'll have to figure out something like that because I think every game needs a little bit of humour in it, doesn't it? We just want to take this opportunity in the episode to do a couple of shout-outs to members of the community who are producing content or otherwise making this hobby even more interesting than it already is. The first one that I should mention is Andrew Isherwood, who you probably all know is the official Antares guy at Skytrex. He's doing really great work creatively to release new models by repurposing old models, and we'll talk about that a little more in the episode as well.
So I would like to thank Dino Turner for his fantastic Gar that he's been bringing out. There's some wonderful Gar on tracks, which just looked fantastic. And literally earlier on today, a Gar Leviathan picture came out, and that thing is an absolute beast.
Yeah, and the rules that go with it as well, I feel like maybe that should work its way into the app at some point as an official addition to the Gar list.
Yeah, it feels very Gar-like.
Yeah. We've also got Fernando Rodriguez Roldan. I hope I got your name right there, but he's been putting out fairly regular video content in Spanish, but it's all got English subtitles as well, which is great. And the most recent video he put out was a faction focus on the Pan-Human Concord. So if you haven't already watched Fernando's videos, then make sure you get over to YouTube and watch those. The links are on the Facebook page.
And for me, Cedric Flattery. I really liked the drawing that he put up of the two Concord.
Yeah, he's done loads of really good artwork.
That was incredible. It really struck a chord with me because you've got one with his visor pulled up And it just really sort of brought home the human aspect to it to me.
Yeah, yeah. And I love the art style as well, actually. A while ago, I did a bit of Facebook stalking and looked at all of his previous artwork posts, and they go back to like years and years ago, pre-COVID at least. Mm-hmm. And there's just a lot of really, really nice artwork in there. I think he should release an artwork book, personally.
Yeah.
And for our last mention, it would be remiss of us not to give a shout out to Beyond the Mates of Antares, produced by Chris Clem and Johnny. They beat us to episode one by a matter of hours, but it's great to have other content that we can listen to without having to produce it ourselves. So we wish them every bit of luck, except when it comes to releasing episode two, which hopefully we'll get out maybe a couple of hours before they do. But thank you to those guys and to everybody else in the community who's producing content that makes this hobby what it is. Without further ado, let's get back to the episode. I think this is probably the point to talk about the quiz. So let's move on. And I'm going to actually ask both Joshes to participate in this quiz as well.
Oh, good Lord.
Do you think you're up to it?
Absolutely. out of interest, how serious do my answers have to be?
it depends on where you want to
finish. What's the level of vagary we can pull off here?
Depends on where you want to finish up on the leaderboard, I've got to say.
Just remember, you two are already at minus two because I'm with Jamie and I brought sweets with me for bribery.
That's true, yeah.
That's not fair.
Okay. We're already on a negative, it's fine.
All right, well, let's fire up the first question and see how you guys do.
Just so you two are aware, he's turned the laptop around so I can't even see neither, so there's no cheating.
Oh, good.
So we've got a mix of questions. Some of them are about the rules and some of them are about the law. So that should hopefully make it some reasonably fair for everyone. I don't know how has anyone not read any of the background, the lore?
I've read a little bit.
Okay. I'm going to dominate.
Okay, right. Well, we're going to start off with the rules questions, and so I think Josh, you guys should be reasonably good at this because there should be some similarities with bolt action, right?
Yeah, I mean, when I say, like, oh, you need a six to hit, yeah, you know what's right. coming.
Yeah.
So
just don't roll that one.
Would I be right in saying that reactions don't exist in bolt action?
Not really. Okay.
So no, this first question is not going to favour you guys then. So a firefight reaction can be taken under what circumstance? So I'll get Kev, let's get you to answer first. And then that might give Josh and Josh a benefit.
So,
a firefight reaction, if I have to repeat the question here, Jeopardy style, it may be utilized when the enemy has chosen to specifically, I screw this up all the time, specifically chooses to initiate a fire order against you while, being within effective range. That's my final answer.
Have we got any different answers from Josh and Josh?
No.
I'm going to go similar to that, but I'm saying that there needs to be an initiative roll-off as well to pass it before you could fire back, potentially.
I think generally true of reactions anyway. So, okay. This is a tough one because you got very, very close. I'm going to tell you what the answers are after each question. So, Kev, you were very close. You're correct. It is a reaction to a fire order, but it's not up to effective range. It's up to 20 inches range specifically. But I feel like that's close. The fact that you knew it was up to a certain range, I'm going to give you a point for that.
I was going to give you a half of a point. Have a vagary.
J-Dub, I feel like you get a point, but it's a cheeky one because you basically said, yeah, whatever Kev said.
Yeah.
And Josh P., I'm afraid you are on 0 points.
Seems fair.
Question two. So, Kev, what does the agile special rule do?
Agile special rule. That is not the same as the fast special rule. Agile is a rule that is utilized, I think, most commonly by the new Who. And I believe that it means that in close combat, instead of utilizing your strength statistic to determine how well you hit, you use your agility. That is my final answer.
Any other answers?
I'm going for a guess. I seem to remember this has got something to do with movement. Is it you could move through terrain unhindered?
That's what I was going to say. I thought it was to do with moving through terrain without having to. So, like, if you make it, you don't have to make an agility test, when you're going through difficult terrain.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so Josh and Josh have gone for a movement based thing. I'm going to give half a point to Kev and 0 points to.
I know the rules halfway. I promise.
Yeah, it doesn't allow you to use your agility. Actually, even though it's called the agile rule, it allows you to use your accuracy.
Or accuracy, that's what it is.
But you're correct. It is a hand-to-hand rule, and it's also used by Gar outcasts, if I recall correctly, because they have very little in the way of strength.
Yeah, they gave it a big version too. Yeah.
Oh man, that came up in my game on like Friday night. He was like, "I'm rolling with my accuracy." I was like, "Oh, okay." I just didn't even question it.
Yeah, right. Fair enough.
You do you, pal.
Okay, question three. What is the strike value for a mag repeater, Kev?
Mag repeater is a strike value 0.
Josh? Josh P?
I would have said strike value 0, yeah.
I would have said strike value 0, but I'm going to be different and say strike value 1, just in the hope for an extra point.
Fool of a talk. It is strike value 0.
it's like a plasma carbine, but slightly worse.
That's right. Yeah. So you took a chance, didn't you?
No.
Okay. Question 4. What is the maximum bonus that can be granted against a single unit marked by target probes?
Okay. Plus 1.
Oh.
Okay. So
Josh P has jumped straight out in front there with plus 1.
It's definitely not plus 1.
No.
I'm almost positive. I want to say 4, but I know that... No, it's plus 3. It's plus 3 because I remember in many situations it is best to sometimes concentrate fire so that you can guarantee that plus 3. That's what we'll go with. I'm almost positive.
I think this came up in my game the other day. Mm-hmm. I think we played it one way and then it was checked and it was the other way. So I'm going to go with plus 1.
Interesting. I should also note, for those of you who are not sat around the table with me and Josh Wood, that Josh keeps looking over at me to sort of try and
read your eyes.
Yeah, he's sort of like he's mouthing the answer, and looks like there's a question mark hanging in the air. And just to prove that I am completely impartial, I can inform you that Kev is correct, and Josh and Josh are wrong again.
Did so I? You see, this is where you cut me off too soon. I meant to say like one cubed.
One cubed.
Which I think is actually 9.
One per up to 3.
One cubed would be 1. 1 times 1 times 1.
Yeah,
I went to art school.
Yep. I definitely did maths GCSE about 15 years ago.
just following this, and me are both going to get homework to study the rule book.
JP, I think you've got an obvious answer to all of these questions, which is the answer is whatever you say it is, because the intel is never wrong.
That is also true.
You can pull that one out of the bag whenever you like. Okay. Question 5. Of the Pan-Human Seventh Age factions... Oh, this is a lore question. I must have... Ooh. So we've actually got slightly more lore questions than we've got rules questions. Apologies.
Oh, thank God.
You're actually doing quite well so far.
I was surprised, yes.
So of the Pan-Human Seventh Age factions, which can trace its origins back further than any other? So specifically the pan-human factions. It doesn't include the Vol or the Viri or anyone.
I find this to be somewhat of a trick question. I will posit that the Gar are not aware of their origin, and thus not 100% sure who goes furthest, but the ones that brag about it the most are definitely the denizens of the world of Isauri. The Isaurian Empire can trace itself back to being one of the original colonies of Terra Earth. I'm not quite sure what they call it in this setting. I can't remember, but yes, I believe it is the Isaurians.
Okay.
I too believe it is the Isaurian.
Yeah?
So as much as I want to say and try and say, you know, us Concord are more superior, unfortunately it is actually the Isaurians.
Okay, excellent. Bonus point if you were all correct. Bonus point if anyone can tell me how many years after the discovery of the Antarian Nexus Isauri was founded.
47.
47 years? Any other answers?
Repeat the question. I'm sorry, you said
so
before...
if you can tell me after the discovery of the Antarian Nexus, so that would be year zero. How many years was it before Isauri was colonized?
I feel like it's more in the realm of like 150-ish. I'm going for somewhere in that realm.
Go in
a century and a half.
About a century. Dead on 100.
Well, yeah, I'm gonna give the bonus point to Josh Peel because he was the closest. It was 12 years after.
My next answer was going to be 37 minutes. So, you know, either way, I'm still the closest.
Wow. Is that sweet, sweet phase shift technology?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, an interesting point of trivia. The reason I thought this might have been a trick question is, of course, Borum, the homeworld of the Borumites, was known to have been lost in the First Age. I think
that's
the
also
age.
True, yeah.
So, mm-hmm. yeah. And the Gar, yeah, I think you're sort of correct. The Gar can't reliably say when they trace their founding back to, but the question, of course, was which faction can trace their origins back to the other, and the Gar definitely can't because they don't care.
Yeah, they don't have paperwork. They're like, nah. The administrative office is pretty lackluster.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just that's one Gar outcast running around.
Just covered in paper cuts.
Greatest punishment that a Gar can have.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are now halfway through. So, question six. To which age are we referring when we talk of the Warring Ages?
The Warring Third age. Ages.
So Josh Wood the says Warring the Third Ages. Age.
I believe the Warring Ages is
Do I
the
hear
fifth...
the flicking of paper?
No.
You're sort of going, the Warring Ages. The Warring Ages.
Yeah. How do you spell that? I believe it's the Fifth Age, because I do believe it was after the Zaun times.
Ooh. That's a good one. Okay. Josh P?
Well, I'm going to go bang in the middle and go the Fourth Age.
It's Price is Right stuff here. What the heck?
Well.
I was trying to remember when the Lost Age was.
The Third Age, which is what you referred
fantastic.
To.
Correct, yeah.
I got something right.
The Fourth Age was known shortest. As... Yeah, it was. And the Fourth Age was known as the Zaun times, which means that the Fifth Age was indeed referred to as the Warring Ages. Man, I feel like Josh and Josh are really not representing the Tale of Four Shards here.
No, we are not.
But believe me, if you have more important knowledge in your brain, that's...
Well, you're setting the bar very high here, Kev, so well done. Okay, we are on to question seven. What was the name of the Nuhu Mandarin who was lost during the Xylos incident and is still missing in action?
Oh, crap. It is, I believe, I'm going to butcher it. It's something like Yuhamnu, because that's where I got New Turku from, I believe. Oh, right. I believe that was what the inspiration was.
Okay. Any other answers?
I'm going to go with Derek.
Derek. Nice. That famous Concord new commander in Derek.
So I wasn't going to answer. I thought, no, don't answer. Don't embarrass yourself. And then you went with Derek. So I feel like I can't be worse than Derek.
Better answer than that.
Can't even think of a name better than Derek. No.
I mean, Derek's a pretty great name for a new who. So I'm going to have to say that the correct answer is indeed Derek.
There we go, sorted.
No, it is actually...
Who'd have thunk it?
No, it is Yuhamnu, so that is another point to Kev. Okay, although I'm going to give half a point to Josh Peel for creative use of...
Yes.
Damn it!
I mean, he's using her informal name. That was among friends.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know.
Okay, so, question eight. What is the name of the star that orbits Antares?
Oh,
that is dwarf. Obereg.
That's it. Yeah, Obereg.
Because it has the, I think the territory on the equatorial zone of Antares is known as the Tropics of Obereg, if I'm not mistaken.
And our podcast was nearly known as the Topics of Obereg.
Yes. I think I voted for that one, honestly.
Any other answers, Josh Wood?
I'll go with Oberg.
Oberg. Mm. You sound pretty, you sound pretty confident there.
I'm a lot more confident than I was before Kevin started talking, yeah.
It is absolutely known as Oberg, and yes, its path across the surface of Antares, I believe, is known as the Tropics of Oberg.
So cool.
It is cool. So question 9. What is the name given to the genetic experiments gone wrong performed by Rogue Nuhu?
The Misgenics.
I was going to say, I think this might be the Misgenics.
I'm going to give him that. I'm going to give him that one.
I got one. There we go. I saw your eyes light up when I asked that question. That's 1 point for everyone. Misgenic. I technically had written down Misgenic rejects, but I think Misgenics is fine. Okay. Last question. This is your last chance to salvage some dignity, Josh and Josh.
It's gone.
What is the name of the Gar homeworld?
Bold of you to assume I had dignity to start with.
That's a funny name for a
Gar. Yeah, what a silly name. I that answer.
Is it Garvon Prime?
So close. Garron Prime, I think.
It's got Prime in it.
Yeah, I think it's Garron.
So we've got 2 answers.
What have we got? We've got Garron.
Garron Prime. Garvon.
Garon Prime.
Garon, but wait, so hold on.
So he's just getting his deliveries.
Kev, your answer is what, Garon Prime?
I think it's Garon Prime.
Okay. Josh Peel, your answer was Garvon, or?
It was Garvon. I mean, I now know it's not, but I'm going to stick with my guns.
Because the intel is never wrong.
Yeah, the intel is never wrong, and I will die on this hill.
And J Dub, what is?
I'm going Garon.
Gar
Prime.
On Prime. Okay, cool. So Kev's the only one getting a point for that one. But I will award half a point actually to each of the Joshes just because I feel sorry for you.
Thank you.
So
okay, I'm not above taking pity points.
That's fine. So that's quite impressive. Out of a potential score of 10, Kev got 9.5 points.
Wow. Oh my god.
That's so much better than I thought I was going to do.
Well done, Kev.
Very impressive. You only lost half a point because you incorrectly identified the Agile Special Rules using agility instead of accuracy, which is an honest mistake to make, I think, given the name of the rule. And then the runner-up was... Hold on, I'm just adding them up. Josh Peel with 6 points.
Six
out of 10, and that was partly buoyed by the bonus point I gave you for question 5, which was, I believe, being the closest guess to when I saw him was founded.
Which, to be fair, it was either of my guesses, you know, of
was the closest, yeah.
47 years. Or
so soon as you've revealed the other two already in their scores, I'm going to turn my order dice to down. To avoid the abuse that's coming.
Okay, so I won't tell anyone that you only got 4.5 out of 10.
respectable.
Oh, don't worry, I'll edit that out. Okay, so there you go. We've had our inaugural Antares quiz, and Kev, I feel like you have set the bar rather high, except that if we use the same questions next time, then I would hope that someone gets at least 10 out of 10.
I mean, let's be honest, that's not going to happen, is it? So, if we use the same questions again.
No. We need to leave the leaderboard running. And yeah. Then just as Kev thinks he's going to get there, very last episode, bringing Tim back.
Encyclopedia.
That's going to be the
somehow. Somehow Tim gets 11 because he actually corrects us on one of the answers.
Oh, God, yeah. That's a good point. It'll be like a pronunciation thing or something. Like, it's not Garon Prime, it's like
Prime.
No, it's Garon Prime.
Garon Prime, yeah.
You get a roll the R.
If you hadn't specifically said there was a space there, I might have given you a full point for it. In fact, no, I'm going to give you a point just because that way you get 50% exactly.
Happy days, 50%. Go. See, going down always works.
Bang on average. Story of my life. Super.
Okay, well, that's our inaugural quiz. We just had a quick break and we were discussing our paint jobs and we thought we should probably actually commit this to tape. Not tape. It's not really tape anymore. It's digital. commit this to the Intel. And I was just talking about how the the inspiration for my own Algorin, where that came from, because I originally painted them the standard red, sprayed them dragon red, and then used the dip technique from Army Painter. And not to knock Army Painter, because all of my other paints are Army Painter paints, but the dip technique really doesn't work for me. It was I thought it was going to give me a really quick way to apply a wash to all of my models, but it's just like a thick varnish, and it darkened them all down a lot. It made them sticky. It robbed them of a lot of the detail, and it's impossible to remove almost without melting the plastics at least. So I ended up just getting a whole new Algorin army, and originally I was going to repaint it red, and I just wasn't going to use that technique. But then I saw, I think these were your Algorin, Kev. The yours are orange, right? Like an orange.
Correct.
Algorin.
Yeah.
And whereas that, I don't know why it hadn't occurred to me before, but I was like, oh yeah, I can paint them whatever color I damn well want.
Exactly.
Because of course I used to do that with Space Marines when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. So yeah, then I went with a kind of a yellow and black. I kind of liked the contrast. It was almost like a waspish kind of color scheme. Absolutely. Which is obviously where the inspiration came for your yellows.
Obviously, yeah. Well, mine wasn't even that in depth of thought. I thought Hazard Squads. Hazard to me is yellow and black.
That's true, yeah. Good point.
So I was going to paint my Algorin yellow and black.
And have you started painting them yet?
I have started painting them, yeah. I've got them. So I went with, I saw an interesting video on YouTube of painting pink first over and then yellow over the top to give some sort of real orange burnt colours to them.
And that's not very intuitive at all.
No, just searching through how to paint yellow, yeah. And then that popped up. Oh, there we go, that would do.
Nice, nice, okay.
And so at the minute they are spray pink and then yellow over the top. And okay. The yellow covered much better than I was thinking it was going to, so I'm quite new to airbrushing.
Oh, okay.
So that was my first models that I've ever airbrushed. And nice. You hear all the horror stories, don't paint yellow, don't paint yellow.
Yeah, yeah.
It needs multiple layers. So I did it with one layer and it came out really crisp.
Okay.
And sort of covered the pink, so I'm now going with an orangey contrast over it.
Through the airbrush again? Or?
I'm not sure through the airbrush or to paint it on.
Okay. Yeah, just put it through the airbrush at 20 psi, you'll be fine.
There we go. So through the airbrush.
I'm not really that. I do some airbrushing, but I don't really know what I'm doing. So is 20 psi, like, is that low or is that
high? I mean, so what I've learned about airbrushing is if you're putting an airbrush paint through, 30 psi. If you're putting a wash or a contrast through, 20, because it's so much less.
Okay.
Kind of viscous. It's just literally like spraying water. So, but that's, I mean, there's probably about 100 people now just screaming at this, like, oh my God, what does this heathen even know?
Fair enough. I suppose it's trial and error as much as anything, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Other than, so you, obviously you're painting your Algorin at the moment, Josh and Josh P and Kev, what are you guys painting at the moment? Anything on the table?
I mean, most of mine at the moment is like bolt action stuff, but obviously I've got my new purchases coming this very soon. So I've gone for the C3M4 and the C3T7. So
yet again, we got incredibly lucky. And for the King's Coronation, Warlord Games put on a sale again.
Yeah.
Just as our purchases were due in, I think it was a 20% offset.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even realise the king was being coronated. I just saw like 20% off. And
it was like,
oh, wow. Excellent.
So, I managed to get a whole other unit in for the same price as what I was originally going to buy.
Yeah.
So I was quite happy. So I managed to get my two pan-human squads, a batter drone squad, which originally was £50, just over. Because I tried to stick really close to the budget this time. And then the 20% sale came on, and I managed to get an Andak support drone with a plasma light support, and that took me to £51.60.
So it still went a little bit over.
Still went a little bit over, but £1.60 is better than £38.40. So I'm going the right way.
Yeah, fair enough. And Kev, what about yourself?
So I am currently trying to figure out how to, maybe you guys know, I had years ago, one of the gentlemen I worked with played one game of Antares with me and then impulse bought an entire Boromite army. And then he moved the other day and showed up at my place of work with a giant box of half-painted Marmites, and he was like, you take these, and I was like, hex, yes. So, hello, hand-me-downs. But
nice.
But for some reason, alcohol has not removed whatever the heck paint he chose, so I'm going to put some elbow grease into it. But the Boromites that do not need to be stripped, I have been painting them this, I've gone with red, like a deep crimson red with like a apple red highlight for their armor. And then I'm basically just doing a bunch of different, I've always liked to vary the skin tones of the infantry because I feel like it gives it this amazing tapestry. And so basically I've just been trying to look at different techniques on painting rock. And then I have so many freeborn models. It's ridiculous. I think I have like 3 squads of Ardenari. If you're familiar with the Stargrave minis, they feature a fish head, and that fish head fits perfectly on the Damari bodies. And so I've been, it's like a almost like a Star Trek fish person is what it looks like, for lack of better terms.
I was trying to figure out what you meant. I thought maybe you meant like a transfer with like some sort of shield or something.
Head. Yeah, literally. And so they fit perfectly. And so I have been writing fiction based on my Freeborn faction. And it's like 3 Freeborn factions that end up coalescing, and one of them is a purely space force, and for whatever reason they got fish people allies. So I have like 3 squads of like fish people Damari, which look really cool, and I've been painting them blue because, you know, why not?
I mean, that's the beauty of Antares, is that you can create anything you want. If you want fish people, then go ahead.
There's a soggy planet somewhere, and they were like, you know, let's make a few adjustments.
It's like what would have happened to Kevin Costner in Waterworld, given another generation.
Exactly. See, you know what I'm talking about.
Amazing. Okay, cool. Well, so, I mean, I've got stuff that I need to paint, but none of it's getting painted at the moment. I started trying to paint something today. So I can probably safely say this because my dad isn't going to listen to this podcast, but I bought him for his birthday, which is coming up. He loves Dad's Army. And so I bought the Dad's Army unit for bolt action, and I'm painting those up. But I haven't gotten – I've been putting it off and putting it off. And I base coated them this morning, and then I got the airbrush out to try and spray like the army green on them, and the nib is broken. So now I've got to order a new nib, and I've got like a week left to try and get them painted up. So that's going to be my my focus this week, is get those painted. Nice. I feel like I should get someone else to paint them. If only I knew someone that does commissions. but then you'll probably just paint them the wrong color or get the eyes wrong. So
yeah, exactly. Big ugly eyes.
So yeah, no. But I will get them painted at some point. I don't even attempt eyes myself. I just put the skin tone on and then a bit of wash and assume they've all got their eyes shut. But I did. I last year for his birthday, I got him the MASH unit.
Nice,
for, and they came out really, like, the detail on them actually is really impressive. For a model so small, with very little effort, I'm not a great painter, but with very little effort, I could tell, like, you could see the faces of the characters.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone ever watched MASH, but like, you know, you got Klinger's nose and like BJ's like mustache and stuff, and you can see it all like crisp as anything in those models. So I'm looking forward to getting the Dad's Army ones painted up.
So while we're talking about newish models to us,
oh yeah,
there were some new releases from Skytrax, I believe, as well.
There actually were, yeah. You want to highlight what those were?
There were some Concord ones.
Yeah, there's a dude with a real big forehead, like he had a bad hairline.
Yeah, because they're actually, I like the approach that they're taking. They basically took, so for anyone who's not come across these, they took some models that came packaged as part of the Jai Galeas special character, who's a Concord Nuhu Mandarin. And he comes with 2 intelligence bodyguards who have got a very alien kind of look to them. I say alien, but they are still pan-human. But they weren't available unless you bought Jai Galeas, and now they've been released as a separate separate purchase, so that you can have them as squad leaders, you could have them as characters in their own right, And I really like that approach because they, Skytrax, obviously, since they inherited Gates of Antares, so they don't really have, I think, the resources yet to produce any brand new models, but the terrain objectives that they've been coming up with, that's quite a creative use of existing models, casting them and then releasing them as objective markers. So that's a great way to be moving forward.
One of the sad things is always like, I think you made the comment, you're like, oh, I didn't get it fast enough the game. Yeah. The one advantage that we do have as people who love Gates of Antares is that the range that they did produce it's quite large, honestly.
Yeah.
And the fact that they chose to sculpt different, like, for instance, like the weapons teams. The weapons teams I find to be a wealth of, like, looked over miniatures. Because they, for whatever reason, decided that they were going to model them to be different. So it's like, you know, they could have just had a, you know, bland, normal, quote unquote, you know, weapon team crew person. But they really do look very different. And it gives them, I'm loving that seeing Skytrax kind of lean into this because they have so many minis. It's just the way you think about them. Because, for instance, with my Freeborn, so many of the, I think there's a female character for the X launcher that has her like in this really dynamic pose pointing forward and she just has her hand back. Well, I chopped that right off and added a cavalry saber and now she's one of the, like the leaders of the, forces. And, you know, nice. You can do that with so many different things. And it's really cool that I hope that they continue to offer these miniatures just by themselves. Especially things like San Ra and whatnot that, you know, come in a weird number of, like, you can have a maximum, or the bikes, you know, it would be great if they'd sell individual jet bikes and whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the San Ra, especially because they obviously, they've changed in V2, the default squad size is 4, but you still can only buy them in 3s, so at some point you've either got to keep buying them until you can now have, you know, a whole bunch of 4-man squads, or you've got to just downgrade all your squads to 3-man, which is it's what I do at the moment, but I always feel like I want to play them at 4.
Mm-hmm.
I think, if I remember rightly, they have hinted that they are planning on doing that, though.
I'm excited for that, because it really does make the modeling opportunities increase tenfold, because, I mean, I think all 3 factions that have the heavy plasma cannon, or plasma bombard, I'm sorry, they all have these guys that have weird hand things. I'm not quite sure how to describe them, but their arms are like giant, and you can see like orbs and whatnot. And I've been writing in my own free time, like I'm writing rules for a specialist that could be added to any of those faction squads. It's like a close combat guy. Like he's got this power fist or something like that. I don't know.
But that's really exactly what it looks like though, isn't it?
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah.
And
so it's like, yeah, you could include that, or you could just include one of the normal dudes standing there with like a round in his hands or like, you know, looking in the distance, and you take all those really cool looking ones, take them out and convert them into special units that you can just use as like house rules and stuff. That's just fun.
Yeah.
Well, it's like for me on the new who, for my Isaurian, I can upgrade any of the Narvesh that go with her to Sanvesh for an extra point. Mm-hmm. So being able to buy them singularly that way as well.
Yeah,
would give a great option and really influence that alien aspect if you've got 2 giant monsters running with your Nuhu.
It would be nice to be able to do it for almost any range. Like I know certainly back in the day, Games Workshop's mail order system, you could order right down to, I want this arm from this model. And logistically, that's probably quite a lot to maintain, but the opportunities for making the most of a range that is not currently expanding, other than through creative means, that would I think open up a few doors potentially.
Mm-hmm. While we're talking about random add-ons and stuff, I have one list that with Kev coming on I made.
Oh yeah,
I wanted to run past him just as something heck completely random.
Okay.
I was having a look at my Azorian stuff and looking at ways that could be quite a funny way of playing it. So I looked at a Togra transport drone.
Okay.
And then looked at its transport capacity. So it's got a transport capacity of 8. So I was like, oh, that could be quite cool. You could fit a couple of units in there. Some things take up 2 slots. And then I stumbled across the Andak medium drones take up 3 slots.
Mm-hmm.
So I might have made a list that's currently, it's not complete, but it's sat at 5 order dice at 55 points. It's got the Togra transport drone, an Andak medium drone, another Andak medium drone, and then the Namak support drone.
Is that two slots, that one?
So that's two slots. The Namak support drone is a smaller drone. So you'd have
those
three running around inside the tow drone. Yeah.
Well, and the transports are, I mean, at low level point, they're like so hard to destroy. So that would be a nigh impenetrable shell, depending on what your enemy brought.
Yeah, Res 13, obviously you spend for the additional batter buddy. So you've got two batter buddies.
I prefer it if it was a butter buddy.
Yeah, butter buddy. Yeah, it just slips off and gets around.
And what was your... What was your Algorin transporter, Jamie? Because that had a butter buddy, because it literally got cut through by the plasma.
The Defiant, yeah.
It did not last long.
It was the first time I fielded it as well, and I was like, I'm looking forward to seeing how this goes, because it's quite a nice-looking model. And it like sort of poked its head up above cover and then got shot right out of the air. I think it was empty at the time, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, you'd managed to disembark.
See, I just love the idea of trying to keep him inside. Then eventually you pop the Togra.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, and then out from inside it comes two Andaks and a Namek, all with batter drones as well. And just swarm forward again.
Now, what would you equip each with?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so I've already done this one. So it would be two plasma cannons, one on each of the Andaks, and then the Namek support drone with the plasma light support.
So you'd have three plasma light supports firing every turn. Plus two plasma cannons.
That's going to cut down a lot.
Yeah,
you're gonna liquefy quite a few people.
that sounds like the perfect foil to your proposed misgenic regen force. just that much firepower.
I don't know. I don't think that would actually.
It's a rule that I'm not aware of.
I suppose points wise.
So what happens to a transport if it's destroyed? What happens to the units inside?
So it is surprisingly. No, it is always pretty safe to be in a transport, because if I'm not mistaken, anybody who's within just appears outside of, goes down, and might receive a number of pins. But that's it. I thought that, you know, like, it says that they're miniaturized. So in my imagination, I thought people would be becoming large too quickly and turning into hamburger meat. But apparently they roll to safety. But I mean, it really does. But I mean, in the last narrative campaign on our channel, that I thought that was going to spell the doom for a unit. Because it was about to absorb all this fire, but it still survived. So it's like it's pretty safe to be in a transport, even if you are in front of a lot of anti-tank.
Yeah, so I've just found the rule. You're absolutely right. You make a one move, a one M move, go down, and then you get one pin per unit that disembark that way. So that does feel fairly tame. I think that's probably deliberate, because otherwise. I don't know. It's hard, it'd be hard to balance, because if it was the way you maybe had to take like a hit, then does that become too powerful? The transports then have got a massive target, and you would never use them.
Correct. It's that initial roll. It's the same as in bolt action. If a transport's hit, the unit inside can take D6 hits.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
yeah.
So it bases off of that. You could only roll a one.
Mm-hmm.
Now the only thing I would ask about that force, though, is that I'm actually not familiar, but can the Isaurians actually run a drone force? I don't know. Is that an option still for them?
I think they can, because they've got a drone commander, haven't they?
I'm almost positive they have three. I think they have the Son heavy, the phase, like the human heavy, and the drone. But I'm not 100% sure. I can't remember if that was transferred over.
Yeah, so the list would need tinkering with to make it legal. The Togra is not technically allowed in that level,
and I would need at least
two more units with the core tag
to boost it up. None of the ones that you're proposing.
None of them have, core. So I'd need to fit two more units of core in, but it could be the Isaurian drone commander.
He could sit qualify. In there. Yeah. But would you have to run a human or son for a unit still to fill in the core for that? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't think he's got the core.
That's what I thought. Okay, yeah. So they did, because I do appreciate that Tim made an effort to separate the factions thematically.
Yeah.
And so now the Concord for sure still can have, they can't. Hold on a second. Do they only do strike and drop?
Yeah. I think
This is the problem with the two versions. I can't remember if they... I think they did eliminate the drone-only forces, if I'm not mistaken.
I think you are right, actually. It only just occurred to me that happened because I still, in my head, think of the Concorde having access to that drone-only force.
Well, I think this is probably the most organic transition possible into... I think you said we wanted to talk about rules that confused us. As we are steeped in confusion.
So I'm looking at it now, and yeah, they literally just have strike force and drop force. But of course, mm-hmm. I mean, Tim has said on several occasions, I think most people would do this anyway. The mm-hmm. rules are just there as a framework, and if you want to do something that's outside of those, you can. And
I think rules are more of a guideline than actual rules.
Yeah. Okay, Barbosa. But I think if you wanted to kind of have a guiding light so that you don't accidentally make something broken, you could probably use the version 1 lists as a starting point. Obviously, it doesn't transfer over quite the same because the version 1 list building was very, very different, mm-hmm. but you could look at, you know, build a list in version 1 and then see if you could build a similar list in version 2, like what would that selector look like?
And it definitely, I think the main decision revolved around how difficult it is to destroy the tanks, basically. They allow you to have the lesser transports, except for whatever reason, the Togger. I can't remember why the Togger wasn't included in that, but I think that was mostly it, is because I definitely ran some drone forces, and it was pretty brutal for the opponent, because you're like, what did you bring? And they're like, I have 3 squads of Damari, and it's like, I have a tank. And they're like, oh.
So, I think if I was putting together like a list based on just drones, I'd say limitation wise, you'd have to make like your core choice the minimum level drone. So for the Concorde, that's the C3D1, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. And then the Isaurians, it's the Namak support drone. That's the equivalent, right? Mm-hmm. And initially you think, well, yeah, but they still put out quite a lot of firepower. But actually, if you compare them to a unit of infantry, they're quite fragile. They've mm-hmm. got access to a battlefield, sure, but that's a 2-point upgrade. And they, although they've got like a plasma light support, that's still only putting out 3 shots compared to like rapid fire on plasma. It depends on what you're fighting against.
It is. They're res 8. So the res is not too bad. But then don't forget, for being Isaurian, they've also got the phase shift shields. Yeah, which tend to help them out a little bit when that shot comes through. Yeah, they haven't got the fire out.
But hold on, though. Phase shift shields on infantry allow you to go down. Do they work the same on a drone because it's a damage chart unit?
I don't believe so. I think the rule states that there's a separate... It does still help them, but I don't think it's nearly as good as...
So it's the unit must have an order die in hand or must have an order die allocated to it that's not down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So take the order die from the bag. If there's no one in there, turn the current order die to down. Mm-hmm. Then the final calculated result on the damage roll is improved by 2.
Okay, so that
annoyingly kind of... handy.
Yeah, so I couldn't... if it went through, it wouldn't be destroyed, so the worst you could take mm-hmm. is a 3.
Right. So you're going to get potentially a lot of pins.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
You're going to get pins and potentially pinned out, but you're not going to die that turn.
Yeah, that's the key thing, though, right? Because once you've gone down, if you've taken extra pins, you might not get back up, and then you aren't going to be able to use those phase shift shields because you're already down. Yeah,
and the phase shift shield only lasts for the current bout of shooting. So you've got to be careful where you use it.
Right, so if you've used it once, and then someone shoots it, because that's the thing, right? A down order on an infantry unit has the same effect no matter how many people shoot at it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It doesn't with a vehicle.
Doesn't affect, unless you're mod 2, and you could turn your second dice, then you could potentially do it again.
But then that's a great effect, because if you're forcing someone to actually take dice out of the bag and... Well, obviously it might not be. That's the point of the phase shift shields. But that'd be an interesting experiment to try. I think we might have to run a drone force. Because I feel like they would put out quite a bit of firepower, but get overwhelmed in numbers. Because
if your luck was good, you'd be good. Yeah.
So I will say, it'd be a good one.
If someone does enjoy doing drone forces and they don't want to worry about the imbalance... An incredibly cheap way to replace the strike squads or the Isaurian phase squads is you can just simply get a unit of 6 gun drones. I think it's 8.5 pounds, I want to say. And okay, yeah, you can totally just either maybe add some Greebles to them to make them a little more substantial, or just run them as counts as strike troops so that you literally have visually a bunch of drones flying around. And that works just the same, really.
Yeah, that's quite a good way of doing it, actually, isn't it?
Because they are just flying plasma carbines.
Exactly,
Yeah, but I mean, thematically, I would question how they would have as much armor as a...
you got to add extra bits hanging off.
Yeah, right. But yeah, no, you're right. It'll be a good way to be able to keep within the letter of the law on the forces, but just skin it differently. So. We did mention a second ago about rules that confused us. So mine was version 1 to version 2 change, and it was... I remember in version 1, for anyone who played it, overhead fire used to be pretty powerful. Mm-hmm. And what made it broken was that if you missed, you would scatter up to D10 inches with an advance order. But if it was a fire order, you would scatter half that. And given the size of the template that you're using, you would almost always hit anyway. And I found certainly that it was a no-brainer. You always use your overhead shots and your opponent learns to hate them. Now, in version 2, they nerfed that a little bit. They made it so that it only scatters if you do a fire order, and it scatters D10 inches. If you miss when you do an advance order, it just misses full stop. So that was the first big nerf. But they also made a buff at the same time, because you used to get a -2 for overhead shots. And I was still playing version 2 with a -2 for shooting, which meant I always missed. And because I was missing, I was always scattering or just missing outright. And it turns out it was only -1. And it doesn't sound like that big a deal, but as soon as I started playing it right, using the -1 instead of a -2 to hit, they became so much more effective. We had a game recently where the overhead fire with combined with scoot ammo, I believe.
It was scoot and scrambler, I want
to
say.
Yeah, that overhead fire, from a defensive position at least, being able to do a fire order and still have it scatter, all those area effect ammo choices still became incredibly effective, and actually being able to hit on target because you only had a -1 was a big game changer. So, yeah, anyone who did play version 1, don't forget the penalty for overhead fire is now only -1, not -2. So anyone else got any rules that they've recently discovered they were doing wrong?
I recently discovered a rule, which was apparently there's something called close combat in this game. And as a Concord player, I wasn't aware that close combat was a thing. I just thought, I got charged, I run away, that was it. So, yeah, I've learned how to use close combat.
And it is which savage.
Close combat is the great decider in Antares. It is insane. Like, I mean, when you have an Isaurian Taurus squad, for instance, I would say the bane of my existence, those things can delete any... They might die themselves, but oh my lord, they'll kill anything you put them in front of. Like, it's so brutal.
Yeah, they really do. I think the only close combat unit I would rate higher, and it's not because of their damage output, it's because of their mobility, are the Virai defenders.
Oh,
and that's only when combined with a nearby architect, because they have a movement 6, that's an 18-inch sprint, and then if they get an overclock, they can sprint another 18 inches in the same turn. So 36 inches in one turn, those units that thought they were safe and at long range are suddenly dead, which is incredible.
Yes, for anybody listening who's new, I would say the one advice I have for after playing so many games with close combat is, in Antares, if you have even the hint of a perceivable disadvantage, do not commit to close combat. Like, I cannot tell you how many times I'm like, I got one pin, I'm fine. Or, like, you know, it's like, and then you'll go through and you're like, well, no one did anything and I'm all dead. So unless you have an insurmountable advantage or are absolutely tricked out for close combat, don't even attempt.
So actually, you just reminded me of another rule that I frequently get wrong. And this one's around close combat, which is when you lose close combat, the way we've been playing it, I think, quite often is you make a break test at that point, and if you fail, the unit is deleted. Right? They just cheese it out of there. Mm-hmm. But that only happens if you've... I think it's if you've taken half casualties, whereas we've been doing it at any point. So I think what's actually supposed to happen is they go down.
Yeah, there's a lot of weird... Because I think it did work In version 1, I'm almost positive it was where you just killed them outright, but I think they made it less brutal, which is very easy to, because when you're, you know, you got the red so mist descends, and you're ready to just slaughter, and it's like, oh, that's right, no. You,
the red mist, also known as what's left of the Concord.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. That's what I was like, always move back. The Concord have nothing but a new who to stop anything in close combat. Well, yeah. Drop troops, sort of.
And you've got the Kras, but the Kras, I find, I've never seen them really shine because they're not as good as everyone else's specialist close combat units.
It's important not to listen to the Kras. All they'll tell you is that they want to charge, and they're decent at it, but you just got to be like, nope, sit where you're at and shoot.
Yeah, you've got a plasma carbine, that thing works in range.
I'll say, they're more of a, they're decent for counter charge, because it's like, because then they can hopefully weaken the unit to the point that when they die, the other Concord will shoot to death whoever killed them.
It's ironic as well that hand-to-hand combat is so effective in Beyond the Gates of Antares, given that the aesthetic of other sci-fi war games tends to really emphasize melee weapons. So whether it's like chainswords in 40K or... I've seen, is it Infinity? I think they tend to have quite a lot of like swords and stuff.
Yeah,
and that's been a deliberate design decision in Antares, is not to have tons of swords, because it's supposed to be the far future and we're not fighting with swords anymore. We tend to fight with, you know, guns.
It's very frustrating. They have to cut a lot of hands off.
So I think it's quite ironic that hand-to-hand is so incredibly effective, probably more so than any other game that I've seen.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. Now, the rule that I always screw up is 100% my fault. I don't know what's wrong with me. I can read, I promise. But for some reason, I have on more than three occasions built a list, including an ex-howitzer. And for some reason, I don't know why, I always think they're mod 2, and they have never been mod 2. It is not a thing. It appears in no rule book, no version, but I have had so many opponents who are like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm using that again. I'm like, they're like, that has no mod 2. I'm like, yeah, oh. I'm like, why did I take this unit? It's so expensive.
But I really want to use it again.
I don't know what's wrong with me, but I have, for some reason, I have never been able to grasp that ex-howitzers fire once for good reason.
Yeah, absolutely. So can you explain then the difference between an ex-howitzer and a mag mortar?
Specifically for, you're going to see the mag mortar utilized the most by the Boromites, because they do get their own kind of like, I can't remember the exact difference, but they do have a superior mag mortar, but it is very subtle. The mag mortar technically has a shorter range, but I don't think it's marginally different. I don't think it really makes a difference, but it also hits harder. So it has a higher strike value than the ex-howitzer. But the ex-howitzer, so it's like, if you're someone who likes to, you know, create that hard-to-get-to unit in the corner of the map, the ex-howitzer gives you the reach required to then engage targets that are on the other side, whereas the mag mortar is going to be more often than not deployed in the center of a deployment zone, because it doesn't, it's like I said, it's very, very small amount of difference. Yeah, right? If I'm not mistaken, they still all fire the specialty munitions and whatnot.
And they're similar points values, right? Because I know they're both heavy weapons, so they come in at the same kind of force levels, that kind of thing.
And if I'm not mistaken, I do not believe either the Imtel factions, or potentially, I don't think everybody has access to the mag mortar anymore either. I do believe that they have curtailed that.
The plasma bombard.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. And is it just the plasma bombard, or is there another? Because you've got obviously ex-howitzer and mag mortar are both the heavy weapon overhead weapons.
Yeah, we get access to the ex-howitzer as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so just not the mag. So you get a plasma bombard instead of a mag mortar.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. And that's obviously going to be what, higher strike value, but it's got potentially plasma fade, I guess.
So it's strike value 9, and obviously you can't move and shoot with it. Unless you mount it on a C3 M25.
Yeah. I remember now.
The tanks make it much better, because I think that might be where I got it, because I do believe you can have an ex-howitzer with the heaviest Concord tank, which is brutal.
You certainly can. it's quite possible for that sort of thing to pin out a Gar command crawler in the second turn of the game.
I was just about to say is that that is actually the, I think that's the most important, arguably, difference is that the X launcher can cause a maximum of 4 pins with a net round. The X howitzer, that cap increases. And if I'm not mistaken, the mag mortar is the greatest. So you can literally hit with a net round with an X howitzer and almost completely pin out any unit that is leadership or command 6 or less, which is pretty insane.
That's big.
Yeah, absolutely. And then obviously it just gives you a jump start on any other pins that you want to then put on. So getting that net ammo out early and then following it up with just continual blast ammo and anything else that can hit it is very, very effective. Hopefully that's sated your appetites for Beyond the Gates of Antares for another month. I keep doing this. We did this at the end of episode 1. We don't really have a planned release cadence, but as things currently stand, we're looking at every couple of weeks because I took so long to edit and publish the last one. So hopefully I'll get this one out quicker and we'll see if we can follow up with another episode in the very near future. Thank you very much, Kevin, for guesting on our show.
Oh, absolutely. It was phenomenal. This was so fun. I loved the first episode. You guys invite me back whenever. I'd love to be a guest again.
Absolutely. Well, now that we've figured out the technical side of things, I think we can absolutely do that. Thank you very much to Josh and Kevin, and thank you to myself, obviously, and thank you to you guys for listening to it. We'll catch up with you in the next episode.
See you later, guys.
See you later. Remember, glory to the Battadrones.
Glory to the Battadrones.
Glory to the Battadrones.